Well, good morning. It's really good to be with you. I just want to tell you a little bit about myself, in addition to what Bob has mentioned, and also tell you a little bit about the ministry that the Lord has given us in Mexico. When I was about 15 months old, I don't remember too much about that, but my parents sold their business in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where I was born, and my father took a pastorate in northern Minnesota. Now, to give you an idea how far north we were, the biggest event every month or two is when the gas truck came to fill up my dad's 55-gallon drums with gasoline so he could put that into his car every time he needed gas. So obviously there were no gas stations. I think the nearest store of any size was about 30 miles away. So we were way up there. So later on, when I was about 10 or 11, when my father understood from the Lord that he was to go to Mexico, I was ready to go along. I was ready for a change of scenery. To me, the ends of the earth at that time were Minneapolis. And so we went a little farther. We went all the way to Mexico. Well, I lived in Mexico, had a great time there. Lived there till I was about 17. When I finished high school, then I came back to the U.S. and began to go to school. And up to that time, I'd never been to high school in the classroom sense. I'd gone by correspondence course. So my first year at Moody Bible Institute in Chicago was a year of really learning how to survive within the classroom situation. But I did. And the Lord really used some things in that school in my life. One is I met Linda there, and whom I later married. And then also I met a fellow there at Moody who began to follow me up and disciple me in a personal way. I'd gone to Moody looking for some help. I really wasn't finding what I needed. And then along came this fellow, and he taught me how to witness, and that's what I was really trying to find, really wanted to learn. And he began helping me in other areas of my life as well. Well, I really appreciated that. And so when I finished at Moody, I wanted to go to a campus where I could get some more training with the Navigators and grow in my own walk with the Lord and in my ministry skills. And I went to Western because I knew Bob Sparks was there, and I'd known Bob Sparks. But when he heard I was coming, he went to England. And he's never been back to Western since. Well, the Lord probably really led him there, I hope. Didn't get scared off by me. But the Lord used that time in my life and had some real fond memories of Kalamazoo and what the Lord did in my life and through me there. Well, following that time in Kalamazoo, Linda and I went to Notre Dame. That's in South Bend, Indiana, to begin a ministry there. And we ministered there for about 3.5 years before going to Mexico. Well, when we went to Mexico, we had twin daughters that were just about a month or a year and 8 months. And then shortly after we were in Mexico, Andres was born. So we have a little boy who's a Mexican. And when he meets people, they ask him his name, and he says, "Well, I'm Andres, and I'm a Mexican." Now, in the months that we've been here, he's totally forgotten his Spanish. He doesn't even like to talk about Spanish, but he tells you he's a Mexican. So when he goes back to Mexico in about 3 months, he'll have to learn Spanish all over again. Well, what is the Navigator ministry in Mexico? I'd like to just give you a few things that God has done in the lives of people there. And several years ago, an optician named Christina went to study English in Vancouver, Canada. And while she was there, she met a Frenchman from Quebec named Raymond. And he had some contact with the Navigators. He knew the Lord. And he said, "Now, Christina, when you go back to Mexico, I want you to get in touch with the Navigators and get involved in a Bible study." Well, she did get in touch with us because she was interested in Raymond, not because she was interested in a Bible study. But as she got into the Bible study, you know what happened. God's Spirit got a hold of her and brought her to Himself. And then, as she met the Lord, she began witnessing to her brother, Jorge. And she invited him to a conference, and he was very skeptical, very leery, very turned off by anything that had to do with religion whatsoever. But he met the Lord, and the two of them began witnessing to their sister, Chela, who was married, had a family. She and her husband were dentists, and so he brought them to a gathering one night in our home, and he said, "Now, I would like you and Linda to do a Bible study with Chela and her husband, Jose Luis." So we started a Bible study with them, and in a short time, Chela really met the Lord. Jose Luis probably isn't a Christian yet, but Chela has really been growing. Then the three of them, Christina, Jorge, and Chela, began witnessing to the rest of their brothers and sisters and their mother, And so one night we were having Bible study with Chela and Jose Luis, and the mother lived right next door in the same apartment as just like the next room. And she came by one evening, we sat alone, said, "How are you?" And she said, "Fine." And she's a little bit grumpy, and then she said, "Well, you have Bible study with everybody else, but no one has Bible study with me." So I said, "Well, sorry, we'll have a Bible study with you too." So she saw everyone getting into Bible studies, and she wanted to get into one too. And that was the first time I'd really had a Bible study with a woman who was about 65 years old. And I was just, you know, a young whippersnapper. But we had a Bible study with her for several weeks, and it satisfied her need to really know what it was to receive Christ and to receive assurance of salvation. Then we also started a Bible study with her other son, whose name was Isain. He's a doctor. And we studied with them for a while. Well, about this time, several months had gone by, a year or so, and the father came home. He was living in another city. Now, just to give you an idea of this father, he was really the archetypical Mexican macho. In fact, one time he left home one day for work, and he didn't come back for 3 years. And he didn't leave any information that he was going to be gone or where he was going or when he'd be back. So he showed up 3 years later and kind of picked up life where he'd left it. And in the meantime, he'd left other sons and daughters either born or being born in a different part of the country. Well, he also worked for the police force in Acapulco. And now, in Mexico, the criminal doesn't have the rights that a criminal usually does here, or a suspect. But when they were unable to get a confession from a suspect by the regular means, they would take him up to a cliff overlooking the ocean and then say, excuse me, and say, "Now, we'd like you to tell us what you did or we're going to push you in the ocean." And some of them wouldn't tell them what he did, and they'd push him in the ocean. So, sharks get rid of the evidence in a hurry. So that's the kind of man he was. In fact, when he'd get together with his buddies, they'd reminisce about the people they'd killed and the beatings they'd committed and the things they'd done. They were their war stories. Well, natural to say, this man was very antagonistic towards the gospel. And when Jorge began to witness to him, he'd laugh, but he'd listen. Well, he became very sick. And Jorge continued to witness to him. And then Jorge, the night that he died, was able to lead his father to the Lord about a half an hour before he died. That's what you call a deathbed conversion. But the Lord's salvation is full and free, isn't it? His forgiveness is complete. And that man went into the presence of the Lord. Excuse me. So that's a little example of how the gospel moves along family lines and relationship lines. I appreciate that. It's nothing stronger than water, is it? Thank you, Ron. I'll let you know if I need that one, too. Well, there's also a dentist named Federico. And he is Dan Travis, and his family's dentist. Dan Travis is the national director for the Navigator Ministry in Mexico. And Dan was going to him for his dentistry work, and Federico was always a Marxist and an atheist. Well, they'd talk about Christ, and Federico obviously didn't believe it, but they'd have a good discussion each time Dan went to the dentist. And then Federico said to Dan one day, he said, "No, why don't you start Bible studies with my wife? You know, what else? We've tried everything else. We've separated. We've got divorce proceedings going." And Dan said, "Okay, well, I'll see if Diane can do that." Diane is Dan's wife. So Diane started a Bible study with Graciela. And they began studying, and Graciela became a Christian. And her life really began to change. And Federico was so surprised that he began attending Bible studies. And he'd come every week, and he went all the way through the Gospel of John. Well, he told Dan a few weeks later, he said, "You know, it's really amazing what's happened to my wife." He said, "I was seriously contemplating having her killed because I considered that was the best solution to our difficulty. And he said, well, I know, you know, quite a few people that for $400 or $500, they do the job very quickly and very efficiently. Well, they are now back living together. Federico is probably not a real believer yet. He's an intellectual Christian. He's committed to Christ as the Son of God intellectually, but he hasn't surrendered his will and his life. So if you remember that name, continue to pray for Federico, that he would meet the Lord, that he would surrender his will to him. Well, not only are we working among students and professionals, but sometimes we get out into the backcountry as well. We like to take students out on a week or a week and a half, two-week trip with backpacks out into the rural, primitive areas and give them an exposure to the way the rest of their country lives. Well, one time, there were six of us, my father and I and four other Mexicans. We'd taken a trip, and we're in a primitive area where you can only get in by foot. And we'd come to this fork in the trail. And we thought, now which way should we go? My father, who was really well acquainted with this type of area, we got his counsel, and he said, well, it seems like the trail to the right is probably the best bet. So we took that trail. Well, half an hour later, we began to realize that this wasn't the trail that we wanted. Well, you know, when you get off the trail half an hour, it means that you eventually lose 3 hours. You don't lose half an hour, you lose about three. Well, we were going up this trail, six men with their backpacks, and I was in the lead, and I saw this family coming down the trail, and immediately I could sense that just the man and his family, and that they were very wary, they were very suspicious of six strange men coming up the trail with backpacks. They didn't know whether a new guerrilla movement had started or what. But as they came down, we asked them, is this the trail? Is this the trail? I said, no, this isn't the way. And they said, well, you need to go back this way. So we started back down and said, well, we're going that way. We'll show you where the trail cuts off that you need. And so as we walked down this trail, this man was very suspicious, of course. He wanted us ahead of him, not behind him. And he was walking behind me with his machete in his hand. Machete is a big, long knife, sword-like knife that's used for everything from cutting coconuts to fruit to paring your toenails, and hopefully in that order. But he was walking behind me, and I began to share the gospel with him. Now, I don't know if you've ever been in a more inconvenient situation where you have a backpack on your back, and you're walking down a trail that only has one lane, and you're sharing the gospel with someone behind you who's never heard it before, and you don't have any bridge illustrations or any four spiritual laws. But there he is. But we began to talk and began to use illustrations that he understood. And he began to hear the gospel. We talked about Jesus being the way, the right path. And that man came to an understanding of what it meant to receive Christ. I don't know what he's done. But in those few moments that he was with us, guiding us back onto the trail, he heard the gospel. And I think the Lord sent us up that wrong way to lose a lot of time to meet that man and his family. So we get out into the primitive areas just a little bit too. But the thing that really is the reason for our being in Mexico is what Jesus says in Luke 10:2. And I suppose we often hear missionaries quote this passage or the similar one in Matthew, and we wonder, why do missionaries always quote this? And in Luke 10:2, Jesus said to them, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." Well, that's not just a missionary passage, but that's a passage that reflects the reality of the world. That the harvest is really great. There are thousands and millions of people that don't know the Lord, but there aren't any laborers. And that's why we, as missionaries, are going to Mexico. Isn't just to have a ministry or to do our thing in Mexico. We enjoy it very much, but we're there to raise up laborers. When we first went to Mexico, we met a fellow named Carlos. Carlos was an architectural student. He had grown up in the same generation that I grew up in, the generation of the 60s, of rebellion, drugs, despair, that whole scene. And he'd followed somewhat the same route. And he began to get into drugs, to search for spiritual reality. And as he did that, one night when he was chewing peyote, which is a weed that's chewed to produce hallucinations, he began to reflect on something that someone had said that had witnessed to him. And he began to realize his need for forgiveness, and he began to realize who Jesus Christ was. And he confessed his sins and asked Christ into his life, right in that drug state. Well, shortly after that, he got into a Bible study, began to study the Word, began to pray, began to learn, began to follow him up and disciple him. And then we had to leave Monterey and move to Mexico City. And he carried on the work in Monterey for the last 3 years. And Carlos now has two men, Marco and Manuel, whom he is really discipling. And he is teaching them how to get into the Word of God. He's teaching them how to pray. He's teaching them how to evangelize, witness, and follow someone else up. He's reproducing himself, and he's teaching them to do the same thing. And that's why we're in Mexico, to raise up that kind of man, that kind of woman, who can be a laborer. Because as a North American, as a foreigner, as an Anglo in a Latin American culture, I always will be limited. But we're there to raise up that kind of man, that kind of woman. Now, we hope to go back to Mexico in about 13 weeks. We've started the countdown. And 13 weeks is a long time for us, but it's a short time as well. And we'd ask you to pray for us, as you remember. I'd just like to share several prayer requests with you. One is that we'd accomplish our furlough objective, which is to report to people on our ministry and to raise the additional financial support that we need. And the second request, very practical, is that God would so definitely lead us to two things when we return to Monterey. One is to a car and to the house. And it's not as easy to get a car in Mexico as it is here. There are many other details involved. So pray for a car and a house and God's leading. Then the third thing is that God would give us much fruitfulness in evangelism. And that out of these people that meet Christ in evangelism, that God would raise up quickly a team of laborers. We'd appreciate your prayers for that.